Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on!
From the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada, this is MMA Junkie Radio.
We rollin'!
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goes reporting for duty on a Wednesday night for your Thursday delivery. That's right, still at it. And we got a fun show planned for today where we're going to discuss UFC 266, which takes place on Saturday here in Las Vegas at the T-Mobile Arena. I'm being told that a certain suite has extra tickets, but they're selling pretty good. So for some reason, Goes, I thought this show was maybe losing a little steam in regards to ticket sales and things like that. Because, yeah, Nick Diaz, the return is great. But, you know, that's 5-6 years ago. And a lot of people just don't really know who he be other than Nate's older brother. Volkanovski and Shevchenko haven't become pay-per-view stars yet. And so that little firepower, you know, like, is it there? Is it not there? I thought it was maybe going to lack a little. That along with Delta kind of, you know, taking out the legs of every city for the last month or so. I thought maybe it would lose some steam. Plus, let's not forget, it's football season and one has to manage their budget accordingly. But here we are. And, yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. The little news that there is. I forgot this was an intro. I'm playing it off. MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, September 23rd. All right, Ghost. So by the time most people listen to this, it will really be Thursday, the 23rd. I just finished saying we're recording on a Wednesday at let's see, it's almost 11 p.m. here on a Wednesday on the Pacific time zone. In most time zones all over the world, it is already your birthday. So happy birthday.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Now, if Goes is anything like me, he's probably like, it ain't my birthday. So that birthday might have gone to waste, and I'll probably have to wait an hour and then say it again. But I don't like it when people wish me a birthday a day early or a few days late. It's better than not wishing me one, but you blew it, man. You had 24 hours, and you blew it. Now, the people in Australia or New Zealand will go, well, it's the 26th for me, motherfucker. Just because it's the 25th for you, that's your problem. No, it's your problem, because I'm not accepting your birthday wishes with full acceptance. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm just kind of going, whereas someone that really does it on the 26th, they may get a love, like a heart. They may get a reply back. They may get an extra place, you know, in that I carry all of you. I carry all of you. And it just means a lot more. So take the time within that 24-hour window to nail it, folks, is all I'm saying.
That one doesn't bother me as much. But technically, like people that do say that, it doesn't matter. I wasn't born in Australia, and I haven't been born yet. So that doesn't fly for me. The one I don't like is – I don't like two things. I honestly try and respond to everyone that says happy birthday. I go through them all. I answer. But sometimes I do give up at the end and I just say, hey, thank you to everyone else who gave me birthday wishes or something. Mm-hmm. I don't like the person that goes into that post and says, oh, I missed your birthday. Happy birthday. That's not good enough. You cannot put a happy birthday on one of those. You have to say, my bad, I'm a little late, or crack a joke. Hey, I wanted all the scrubs to go first. Happy birthday. But to try and kind of play it off like, I knew it was your birthday, but I'm jumping in on this one. No, you didn't. The only reason you're wishing me happy birthday now is because you saw this dumb post that's basically me saying I'm wrapping up the party. I'm about to turn on the lights. The party's over. So I think you gotta come in at least with a joke or something.
Yeah, I would agree. That day, it belongs to every single person. All of us have a birthday, and it belongs to every single person, and it's supposed to be pretty special. And when I remember, I let everyone, you know that I really, really wish them a happy birthday and that they had a good one. And when I'm late, I say, I hope you had a nice birthday. I don't try and get cute, like time zone games, or could have sworn I posted it, computer must have froze. No, I was just late. I hope you had a nice birthday. I have gotten cued before where I try and say, hope you had a nice birthday weekend, mm-hmm. you know, but really their birthday was like 2 days ago and it's Sunday and I forgot. Or Facebook spoiled it for me. And I don't really remember them anymore. And I don't really kind of have them in my contacts. Facebook bails me out. So I need to either improve on that, especially my VIP list that I think of, because yeah, that's the worst, is when you have to rely on something.
You know what I don't like as well, and this might be for Patreon. Am I wrong? One of those. I don't like when somebody just puts "Happy Birthday" on your page. That's lazy. When you see somebody in person, you don't go "Hi," and then that's the end of it, right? You usually follow it up with "How you doing?" or something, right? Like, I think you have to. Don't be lazy. It doesn't take that long. Just put "Happy birthday. Hope you had a great day. Hope you got a lot of presents." Just throw something. "Happy birthday" is just so boring to me. Just "Happy birthday."
Well, I'm going to have to take that into consideration because I'm just a happy birthday guy. I kind of let them fly one after the next. Yeah. I try to get it out of the way in the morning so I don't forget.
Even a happy birthday dude or something. Just so that I know it's not a program that's actually writing me. Like, you're a human being is what
I'm not saying. A bot?
You're not a bot, yeah.
Okay. I will try and improve on that then, because I'm guilty of that one. I was thinking of telling people, I was thinking of shutting off comments and then saying real early in the morning, "It's my birthday, but don't write me a message. Here's my number. Call me and sing to me. Wish me a happy birthday, or tell me, or if it's been a while, remind me how we know each other, or give me a special memory between us," right? Just something to switch it up is what I wanted to do. And then I thought, well, because a lot of people already have my number. It hasn't changed since 1998, but goes, I've been secretly thinking of getting a new number.
You're going to get rid of the 714-6126?
Yep. And so that one, I wouldn't get rid of it. What I would do is I would just make it like a hotline, just kind of get the minimal plan so that one I can keep forever. I can never lose contact with people. And I'll just check that one once a week and just get back to people. And then the other one I would give to, because dude, it's not just everyone I know. It's spam risk. It's the, you know, when it's time to vote for politicians, you get hammered with that. When it's time to vote for a bill, you get hammered with that. When it's football season, I'm 91-1. You know, I got the pick of the day. So I got all kinds of stuff happening on my phone. Now I get AT&T every other day going, "You did it, baby. You paid your bill. Come in and cash your coupon." And I know that some dude in Uganda or the Caribbean or Israel, you know, one of those countries that's very, very famous for trying to trap seniors, you know, and run scams. So I think I have too many people, you know, on there, and I kind of want to start with a fresh number.
I got this text the other day. "Yo, are you Cody?" Kody. "I'm Leah. We matched on Scout last time I came to visit my cousin, but we never connected offline. I'm back in the area for a minute if you still want to actually meet up this time. Are you up for it? Smiley face." Who the fuck is this person?
I don't know.
I ain't Cody. I don't know Leah. I don't even know what Scout is. What the hell is that?
They might as well have just said, "Hey, what's your social security number?"
I would have rather them just go, "Give me a dollar." And I would have said, "Sure."
Remember when porn stars used to do, "If you want to spoil me," and then they'd give you the link to their Amazon wish list?
Yeah.
I bet you them chicks just rack it up. All right, my wish list is for a great fight card on Saturday. Goz and I will not be doing a watch-along. It's actually the first time we can kind of do something different in 3 years. Like, that's how long we've been doing watch-alongs, roughly, if I'm not mistaken. We might have missed one or two, but for the most part, like, I have the option to go to Big Ralph's, the fights themselves. Just watch it here. And, you know, I'm going to try and enjoy it. Of course, my first option is to be back with, well, now they're Panda, no longer sportscaster, and to continue doing watch-alongs. I love it. I really do. But there was a few times where Squid would say, hey, we got the suite, want to go? And I just had to turn him down. This time he took me to dinner. Shout out to Squid. It's an early birthday dinner. We went to Oscar's Steakhouse, which is former mayor of Las Vegas, Oscar Goodman, who appears in the movie Casino, who represented Lefty Rosenthal, a.k.a. Ace Rothstein from the movie Casino, and also represented Tony, some Italian name, I don't know. That guy, who is Nicky Santoro. And so he was kind of storytelling in the steakhouse, and Squid took me to that. And first of all, the meal was great. Of course, the company was outstanding. Been a while since him and I kind of hung out like boys. And then Oscar Goodman was cool. Derek Stevens, the owner of the Circa, was there. And a few of the people that were portrayed in Casino were there. So it was a fun time. And I don't know why I'm bringing this up again, but what was I saying? Oh, yeah. So anyway, so I tell Squid, oh, man, what do you know? No watch along this weekend, kind of like dropping the hint. But it turns out he's going to Big Bear, and so I don't even know if he'll have the suite or if he does. But in the end, we did talk about it, and I told him, look, I always tell people, if you're going to pour cornflakes over them tickets, then I'll take them. But by all means, if you're trying to sell them, don't think about me. Don't consider me. It ain't that important. I've been to a lot of sporting events. Somebody told me that one time, a ticket broker in Orange County. I thought it was hilarious, so I stole it. But he once said, if you're just going to pour cornflakes over them, I'll take them, which means if they're going to go to waste. So we'll see, guys. Maybe we have a slight chance of the suite. You know what I mean? Yeah. Unless you have plans. Do you have plans?
No, I don't have any plans. I did I was kind of sad about the watch along today because I had a couple people actually reach out, meaning that they're just used to the rhythm where, hey, we doing the watch along. Are we going to do that thing where fighters come on or whatever? And I was like, oh, man, that's so perfect. You know, I don't have to hunt people down and, hey, you want to do the watch along with us? Like, that was cool. I didn't know who was going to join, but it kind of reminded me. I was like, damn, you're just picking up some good momentum with that.
I mean, we could, you know, if we wanted to, we could, like if we sat at home, if there's no suite and we wanted to, you can do stuff on Facebook and Twitter and just to keep it going, I suppose. But, you know, it wouldn't be like the way how it's promoted with Junkie in conjunction with our friends at Panda. And they got the live Twitter chat and, you know, everything's kind of laid out for us to just basically react and talk and party, but we'll see. Keep a watch out on at MMA Junkie George social media and at the Goes social media. That way, if something pops, we'll let you know. Speaking of that card, here are some odds on that fight card that I want to go over. Alexander Volkanovski is the favorite at -175. I'm gonna use. You know what? Hang on 1 second. Silence is not good. Hold on a second. I don't want to make a grave mistake. We have new partners in Tipico, and Tipico has a really, really strong football presence right now that they've been focused on. And I definitely want to use their MMA odds here. It's just that I've been having trouble accessing some MMA stuff. And so I wanted to give it one more chance. No, I don't seem to see odds on it. So let's just leave it alone for now. Let's use our former partners, BetMGM, just for this right now.
Let's not?
Okay, let's not do that. What shall we do?
Let's just use George's odds. How about that?
All right, my odds are -176 for Alexander Volkanovski. Brian Ortega comes back at +142. Notice how mine are different. They don't end in 0 and 5. That's because I'm coming up with my own odds. Marion Ferreiro. Boy, I like Ortega there. I'm going to include Ortega in some parlays because, for one, he has the ability to finish with hands or with his jiu-jitsu. I think he has experience. I think he's not intimidated by Volkanovski. I don't think Volkanovski's become an intimidating champion just yet. He's become an efficient champion, but he hasn't laid hat like other champions have. Like, look at with Valentina. We'll get to her in just a second. With Valentina, it's like holy cow, she's got to have the worst night of her life, and Lauren Murphy has to just be absolutely special, you know, for us to even consider how that title might change hands. Mm-hmm. But with the other one, man, Ortega, when he takes your back, dude, holy cow. So that's just a piece that you may want to include in your parlay because you get great odds there. Manon Fiorot is fighting Mayra Bueno Silva. Fiorot is minus 260. Silva's plus 205. I think Fiorot goes from the minute I saw her fight the first time is championship material. Maybe not at this moment, but I can just tell she has got the foundation for getting better, for adding tools to her tool belt, and for her eventually to compete for a title. So I'm really excited to see her fight, and I don't mind laying 260 because I really think she's that much better than Silva.
Mm-hmm. I want to – are we just doing the odds now, or are we kind of talking about the fights?
Go ahead and talk about the fights a little bit, yeah, if you want. Go ahead. I just threw out two. Any thoughts there?
Yes. I've been having a lot of problems with the main event. I really have. I've gone back and forth. You did say something that stuck out to me, though, and that's that Ortega has different ways of finishing fights. However, I do agree in fights, yeah, he can finish you with his hands. He can finish you with submissions. But I'm thinking Volkanovski survived one of the best strikers in MMA, and that's Max Holloway twice, right? Max couldn't put him out.
Right.
So I'm thinking he might be safe from Brian Ortega. Brian Ortega seems like he's still getting better. That's the thing. And I can't seem to get the Max Holloway fight out of my head in both circumstances. What he did to Brian Ortega and then what he did in the last fight with Volkanovski, I felt like he beat him. I don't think he destroyed him. I just thought it was clear that he had won that fight. And I do feel like Brian Ortega can do some of those things. The problem is with Volkanovski, I just don't feel like there's that body of work where you could say, that's Volkanovski, you know, that's good old Volkanovski doing his thing. Like, I just don't feel like we've seen enough of him yet.
He's an out-pointer.
Huh?
Basically, I know he's got skills. I know he can kick. I know he can punch. I know his ground and pound's nice. I know he can defend takedowns and submissions. He's very smart. He can execute a game plan. He's very disciplined. But you know what? I mean, if we're really calling a spade, Volkanovski's an out-pointer. You know, he's been winning by decision mostly. It's nothing, like I say, nothing where he's exuding dominance over anybody. So, look, if somebody were to tell me, I got Volkanovski, I wouldn't call them crazy. I would probably take him by decision, honestly. And that's that. He has had a hard time convincing. You know, it may have even happened with GSP, honestly. I'll have to go back and look. But, see, GSP used to really put it on you and win 50-45, 50-44, stuff like that. Volkanovski's winning split decisions. He's losing rounds. Kind of reminds me of Ben Henderson a little bit.
Yeah. But the thing about GSP, in my opinion, I think he was mislabeled with that. Because what I think happened a lot of times was he was so dominant in round one and even in round two that I think fighters just gave up. And what they did was they just went into survival mode. I'm not going to win this fight, but I don't want to get knocked out and I don't want to get submitted. And they would just kind of go into survival mode against the guy. Like, he was that good.
Yeah. If Volkanovski was a football team, he just doesn't turn the ball over. So you actually got to play defense and force him to punt. You're not going to block his field goal, his punt. You're not going to get an interception. You're not going to strip him and get a fumble or anything like that. You got to stop him and make him punt, basically. I am interested to see, you know, this will be his first fight back since COVID. And not that COVID stopped others from getting back to what they were, but he was one of the ones that had a rougher bout with it. He hasn't fought since then. So we'll see. And again, he's going against the guy who, when you have a skill like your jiu-jitsu and it's that much better than everyone else, that still sits in the back of someone's head. when you're in someone's head like that, you know, knowing if that guy takes my back, it could be a world of hurt. That's something, you know, that's an advantage that one fighter has distinctly over someone else. Or when someone has incredible KO power, you know, when they can hit you with their opposite hand with a jab and still put you out. Sure. That's something. But anyway, let's do two more real fast. The Lauren Murphy Shevchenko odds, minus 2,000 for Shevchenko, plus 920 for Lauren Murphy. And then Lawler is a slight favorite over Nick Diaz, minus 118 to minus 104. Those are the co-main event and the featured bout, respectively. Shevchenko, you know, I think she's sending a message that she's not stopping anytime soon. Don't ask her if she's retiring. Do not include her in greatest of all time talk, even though she has the losses to Nunes. I think she really wants to dominate her division and leave no doubt that the only option is for a third fight against Amanda Nunes before Amanda Nunes retires. That's why she's obliterating fighters, not just kind of like beating them. She's obliterating them. That's why everything seems to be so violent. All her techniques seem to be so violent. Good for her, man. I think it's what makes her exciting. And I think Lauren Murphy's an interesting story, and I really, really applaud her and respect her. She had such a tough route through The Ultimate Fighter and now has peeled off five straight, man. That's crazy. That last fight was close, though.
Yeah.
That last fight was close. So she deserves to be there. Unfortunately, she was put on this planet to fight for a world title at the same time as one of the all-time greats. It's just not going to be her night on Saturday.
Yeah, she's going up against a machine. When you look at Valentina Shevchenko, this is a woman that has no vices. You know, even when she's not in a training camp or even just doing the grind, she's still training on vacation. You know, when she likes to go hiking and shooting, like she's still doing, like finding the time to pull over on the side of the road and throw some kicks and some shadow boxing. You know, she still does all that stuff. It's just something that you see this in athletes that start at a really young age. It's just become part of her life. She's just used to it. There are no days off for her. And I'm not so sure that very many fighters, even some of the ones at the top, can do that. You know, they all kind of have their vices. Some of them get in trouble. They're still great, but there's just something about Valentina Shevchenko that she can do fighting 24/7. It's in her blood. So, yeah, to ask her when she's going to retire, like, I don't even know what she would do with herself at that point. But Lauren Murphy, she deserves to be where she's at. But this is, I mean, even if you look at the odds, they're almost ridiculous. I mean, that's what it should be like if one of them was fighting me, I think. I don't think odds should ever be that high. But in this particular case, I get it. I still don't think they should ever be that high when odder things have happened.
And that just goes to show you the money that's already coming in and what the odds makers think of the skill sets. In fact, I'm already daydreaming, goes, on how I think Valentina can beat Amanda Nunes. Because make no mistake, it's not like Amanda Nunes was gifted anything. I mean, she's gone out there and just pancaked everyone.
I thought Amanda lost that last fight with Valentina, to be honest with you. I thought she lost. I thought it was close, but I thought Valentina won.
I thought it was close, but I thought Amanda won.
Yeah?
Yes, because I bet Valentina. Remember I told you, you get that feeling in your stomach like, oh, man, you know, this ain't going to go my way? That's how I felt. So it wasn't a strong case, but I remember, I believe there was a takedown at the end where I just said, oh. I exhaled because I knew that could have been it. Heck, it may have even been initiated by Valentina. I have to look at that fight one more time. But I can already see that Valentina, I thought, has become more of an offensive pressure fighter than she used to be, where she was more of a counter fighter before. And I think that pressure and that activity could maybe tire out Amanda Nunes if they were to fight again. I think Valentina's so good, Ghost, that I think Valentina could drop to 115 and win that title. Although I think she really likes Rose and respects Rose. So I don't think it would happen now. But if it had been Joanna or Zhang Weili, or I guess Jessica Andrade. I think she would do it one time, just to fight to prove that she can do it. Because remember, she only walks around like at 132, 133. She doesn't have to cut for 135. And for 135, she's already under, kind of like Frankie Edgar. And for 125, it's not a huge cut at all. But I think she could do that one time and win. And I think she could go up to 145. And obviously, if you beat Amanda at 135, I think the 145 version is very similar. You know, mm-hmm. Now I have to respect the lioness and say this, that if Amanda were to just beat her the third time, I wouldn't be shocked either. Amanda's awesome. She's the GOAT. She really is. But I think Valentina has improved a lot since their second fight, whereas Amanda has improved, but not as much as Valentina. And I think Valentina's just driven in a different way, and she corrected what I think was her biggest mistake, and that was just not having confidence in the skill set she has to just put it on someone. You know what I mean? From the very beginning. And now that she's been doing that, she is just skinning chicks.
It's hard to even say if Amanda's improved or not because she really hasn't had to show it.
Right.
She's got one. I'm not saying that she has one game plan, but she goes out and does one thing and then she's always successful with it. Nobody's forced her into a plan B before, except for Valentina Shevchenko. So who knows? Maybe there's even more to her game that we just haven't seen because people haven't taken her to that place yet.
Right. I mean, the last time someone really pushed her to go five was Pennington, right? Mm-hmm. And at that, I mean, Amanda was putting it on her. She just couldn't stop her early like she stopped the other fighters. But okay, so I'll even say it. It's a lock. You're not supposed to, but it's a lock. I'm not betting it, so I'm not jinxing anything. But I can't see how anyone's even betting Valentina because it's just the odds are too high. But I don't think anyone that is sweating it because I just locked it. What about Diaz and Lawler? Boy, I was listening to Brett Okamoto talk to Nick Diaz, and he just does not seem like – I thought maybe he would have found a love for fighting in the 6 years he's been gone. Hell no. He doesn't want to do it. He doesn't like doing it. It's a lot of stress. When Brett tried to tell him, well, what's the stressful part, he couldn't even pinpoint what it was, which tells me a lot of it probably is just the media and the awkwardness of answering questions. I think getting in there and fighting is somewhat a little fun for him. I understand being scared. I get that. But I think it's somewhat a little bit of fun for him. But the weight cut and the media obligations, I think he just – despises.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Some people were saying like maybe a possible social anxiety, but I don't really believe that because somebody who has social anxiety probably wouldn't be in nightclubs and stuff like that. You know, like that would trip them out. I think he just doesn't really like to do the media part. I don't think he likes being told where to go and be at certain times. Like he likes to do things his way. And now the sport has evolved so much to where that's just not possible anymore. You know, now there's ESPN and things like that. You have commitments. Back when the first time he fought Robbie Lawler, there wasn't the media obligations that there are today. There were some, but it wasn't anywhere near that. There was no embedded following you around, no countdown shows, none of that crap.
So, ooh, is embedded not even 5-6 years old? Is it still?
That's probably about that, I think, wow. but definitely not all the way back then.
I think he reads chat rooms and forums and whatever, and he realizes what people think of him, that him and his brother are a little bizarre, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think he wonders, like, well, why? But at the same time, you know, he knows that he's had it rough and he didn't excel, I guess, in school. And I think it comes out, and I think, you know, as respected and as beloved as he is because of his fighting skills, I think he has a tough time with people's perception of probably his intelligence or just his, I won't say street smarts, but his what are they called? Like, I don't know. They used to call it a certain sense, common sense, like that he even has that, you know what I mean? Like, like, I think people, when they talk to him, he feels like they talk down to him like he's dumb. That's the little type of read that I've gotten. And I think that bothers him because his feeling is probably like, well, I am a black belt in jiu-jitsu. I have won world titles. I have large social media followings. I get paid well to do certain things. So I'm not a buffoon here. I just can't express myself in a way that I think, you know, others would want me to. And note to anyone that interviews Nick Diaz, keep it simple. You happy to be back? And let them talk. You know, but when you dress up words and hidden meanings and, you know, explore his mindset, and you ever see him just kind of like, what? Can you repeat the question? I mean, keep it simple, man. Just chat with him like he's one of the boys. In that regard, he'll knock it out of the park and give you a fun interview. You know, let him get going. But when you throttle him, I think he's just like, you know, hey, this isn't a chess match. This isn't like two guys going up in a plane and having a, you know, combat in the air where you have to know the instruments on the plane, how to fly a plane and all the training. This is just two people on the playground, you know, that are throwing down, and the rules are simple. Let's go, you know. And I think that's how he likes to approach life.
Yeah, you got, when you ask a question when you're doing an interview, I always picture like entering a room, and the room's got four doors, right? Each wall's got a door. You don't have to go directly to the end. Like you can't do an interview all your way, everything that you want. I think you got to kind of know in which direction, like see how people react to a certain thing. And if it's not a good reaction, then go through another door, you know, and build yourself back up so that you can come back into that direction. But a lot of people just don't do that, man. They want to go straight to the jugular. They treat every interview almost the same. And you can't do that because not people are the same. The thing about Nick Diaz and his fighting style, which I think is very unfortunate, is exactly what you said. I think he has probably read what people say about him. And unfortunately, I think he might be believing that. Because the one thing that I really think does express Nick the best is fighting. I really think when he gets in there, he can do things his way. And I think maybe reading what people are saying, the way the game has evolved a little bit, a lot of shit talking and all that, I think it's gotten in his head a little bit, to be honest. And I think it's created a lot of pressure that didn't used to be there, you know?
Do you remember when Mayhem Miller interviewed him in Hawaii? He asked the question and then Nick rambled. And then Jason Miller was looking at the camera like, can you believe this guy's still talking? Remember that one? Mm-hmm. I think Nick found out about it, watched it, and I could tell ever since then he did not like Jason Miller because he felt like he was clowned. I think that interview and probably a few others just early on made him uncomfortable. He was already not a fan of that, but that made him even more uncomfortable. And, you know, if I was to talk to him, I think the first thing I'd ask him is, man, I've seen you on some crazy bikes. What's the most you've ever paid for a bike? I think he'd really like to talk about his bikes, his triathlons, you know, his personal best. And if you can give me 10 minutes where now all of a sudden I'm kind of feeling you, you know, I put him in that position where I'm feeling you, then I think you can finally say, why did it take 6 years instead, you know, why not four or two? Like, what was so right about this moment? He may even fess up and go, bro, it was the IRS. Or I just got an itch, or, you know, I think he'll tell you like genuine stories, and I think he'll really open up because I think he will have realized that this is someone who's interested in me, the person and athlete, and not like, I think a lot of media, and by the way, I'm not accusing Brett of this at all. No. Brett, you know, does outstanding work, but I think a lot of people just can't wait for him to say something awkward and run and print the headline. And I think Nick's is hip to that.
Yeah, no, 100%. I agree.
All right. So listen, there's a couple of other fights that I want to talk about. We'll throw out some odds and discuss them real fast. We covered a couple here. Oh, did you decide Lawler or Diaz? Who do you like?
I'm going to go with Lawler. The whole switch to 185 is just very odd to me. I think Robbie might have played his cards wrong in that situation.
Yeah.
Because I think you could have probably dragged it on a little bit more and maybe thrown something out, like, let's meet halfway.
Yeah.
And then the more time that goes by, however long that decision takes, you know, you tell Dana that, Dana's got to go tell Nick, Nick's got to talk about it, and then he's probably going to come back to Dana and say, no, how about this? All that takes time. But that time is stress. And it's not stress on you, it's stress on the other guy. I would have played around with that, knowing that at any moment I could just say, all right, fuck it, let's do 185, and it's a done deal. But I didn't think he had to do it right away. I think he could have waited a little bit longer and made Nick Diaz sweat a little bit more.
Right.
I think he misplayed his hand there. But I don't know that the weight is going to really do much for this fight. So I think I'm going to stick with my initial pick, and that's Robbie Lawler. For me, the time that Nick Diaz has spent away is just too long. You know, anytime you've gone away, just think about how much the game alone has changed in that time that Nick Diaz has been gone. Like, think about the calf kick, right?
Right.
That's something that just came along. I mean, granted, it's been a technique for a long time, but it's been used a lot, very effective in the sport. And especially when you think about it, a guy like Nick Diaz, who basically begs for his front leg kick to be kicked, because his stance is so wide sometimes. There's just so many things that have happened while he's gone. I think you have to go with Robbie Lawler in this one.
Yeah, me too. Little intangibles that I've been spotting just has me more comfortable with the guy who, even though he's been losing, he did have his world championship run, and he's also a fighter, folks. Robbie Lawler is a mean SOB, you know, so he'll take that to the grave. He's going to be able to throw hands till he's 75, till he's 80, whatever. But yeah, I just think that's a long time away for Nick. He doesn't seem really, really comfortable as I had been hearing that he had been looking. So we'll see. I may just sit back and watch it as a fan, honestly, because I really feel pretty good about Ortega. But anyway, listen, let's talk about a few fights in just a second. I wanted to try something new. Oftentimes when MMA Junkie posts on Instagram, I'll throw in a comment, and sometimes I get the most bizarre answers goes, and I ain't got time to go in there and hit everyone up one by one. So I'm just going to address them here if you don't mind. But this is the kind of dookie I got to put up with. They posted a picture of 8 years ago today. It was a throwback pic. John Jones defeats Alexander Gustafsson. Remember that first war they had back in Toronto? That fight actually gets inducted into the UFC Hall of Fame. So it's the fight wing or whatever you want to call it. So my comment was one of the best title fights ever. So not just in the light heavyweight division, not just in the UFC, meaning ever, that I've ever seen. Throw in Prides, WBC, everything. But it's one of the best title fights ever. However, I said, don't give any Gusty one. I ain't trying to hear it, basically. He didn't win. I've watched that fight a few times now. He was up 2-1 going in the third, Gustafsson was. I also felt that in rounds 4 and 5, Gustafsson was winning early. In fact, one of those two, I can't remember which, he was like 90 seconds away from actually winning the round. And if he was, he would have been the winner 3-2 versus losing 2-3, meaning 48-47, in my opinion. And in rounds 4 or 5, John Jones came back and won. He won those rounds. And because he won those two, and I think round 2, so he won 2, 4, and 5, if I'm not mistaken, and Gusty won 1 and 3, I thought he was the rightful champ. So, you know, those were my thoughts, and here's some of the replies I got, and I'm just going to answer them here quickly. Christoph 681 says, is that why Jones was in the hospital for a week and Gus went home the same night? The hospital doesn't determine who won the fight. We have a 10-9 system here. And I clearly watched, you know, I put the criteria to use to my interpretation and how I think the judges were going to score it. And I came up with the same score that at least two of the judges did. Hospitals have nothing to do. Have you ever seen what GSP and Fedor look like after a fight? You know, whether they went to the hospital or not, they always look like they got the raw end of the fight. But that's a dumb comment. Ro_Pot28 says, there is no way Gus won that fight. How do you guys think he won? Oh, he's on my side. Never mind. Touch of gloves to Ro_Pot28. The next guy, the Matt Attack, says, yeah, storming back. Because I said Bones came storming back. He writes back, storming back. I don't remember him doing any sort of storming back whatsoever. I mean, look, he didn't get his butt kicked for 3.5 minutes and then all of a sudden have that Ultimate Warrior moment where he just shook the whole octagon, got the crowd going, and then blasted Gustafson, you know, to kingdom come or anything like that. No. Okay, so maybe I should have just said he came back and won rounds 4 and 5. But whatever. When you write these posts, you try and, like, add a little bit to it, you know. But don't go out of your way to point something out that maybe there was one word you had a problem with. I mean, that's not worth engaging, you know. Another guy says, believe it or not, Christoph says, well, actually, those are the only two. Something happens about when I get to this moment goes, I start scrolling, I lose where my place was. But yeah, those were the two that bugged me the most. Here's Christoph adds, I do believe he's judged for being on steroids every time he stepped into the octagon, and that's why he'll never be the GOAT, unless you don't think steroids gives you an advantage either. No, of course we believe steroids gives us an advantage. However, in my opinion, that on that night, whatever testing he passed, that's what was there, and that's what's in the history books. But to be clear, this is what I feel about John Jones. I think Ghost feels a little different. There will always be an asterisk that haunts him a little, but from what I remember, he got big because he wanted to be a heavyweight years ago. He got into powerlifting. He was on suspension, or maybe this was when he was in trouble with the law and he knew he wasn't going to be fighting for a while. And I think that's when he may have probably dabbled, just to add muscle, add size. And when it was time for one of those random tests, you know, he's already admitted that he hid. He says it was for marijuana or whatever. But I think after that, he probably didn't go about it the right way, and whatever ingested kind of had that nanogram or whatever that kept haunting him. But I don't believe that it's what won him the Gustafson fight. The tests that were given to him, he passed, and that's that. Because if we're going to do that, then we got to rewrite the history of the early UFC. We got to rewrite Pride. I mean, that's the hand we were dealt back then. I just can't accept that as anything else. Now, if you want to say, I'm not going to make Jones my GOAT because of that asterisk, he's made me wonder, and therefore it's Habib or GSP. Okay, I'll accept that. But I don't, for this fight in particular, I believe Jones won it, and he won it fair and square.
Yeah, you have to go by the testing that night, he passed in relation to that fight. Now, like George said, overall, when you're talking about greats, the only way of separating them is champs. You just have to be very, very picky. And I'm a very picky guy at that point if I'm separating some of the greats. And something like that, a positive test in your past, automatically for me puts you on the shelf. Because I have never known there to be very many people. I'm not saying it's never happened. But usually if somebody cheats once, they probably cheated twice or three times. It's usually getting caught is what makes you stop. Not all of them do, but usually getting caught is what makes most people stop. Just because you didn't get caught doesn't mean you didn't do it. But at the same time, that those people pass tests on certain nights, I don't know. It's just something that stays in my head where when I think of other fighters that haven't had that, I don't wonder it.
Like Habib and GSP. Or Demetrius Johnson, yeah. All right, that little break in the action brought to you by the official Instagram page of MMA Junkie, instagram.com/MMAJunkie.com spelled out. Check it out, folks. We got over 1 million followers over there. And the staff does a great job of interacting there. All right, so We discussed the main, the co-main, the featured bout. Here's a couple more that are interesting. Curtis Blaydes against Jairzinho Rozenstruik. Blaydes is a favorite at about minus 350. Rozenstruik comes back at about plus 265. Blaydes is such a beast, and he commits so much to his wrestling that I'm almost going to favor him almost over anybody, with the exception of Ngannou. He's lost twice to Ngannou now. And maybe Ciryl Gane. Ciryl Gane may wind up being special. We don't know yet. I still think Ngannou is going to beat him. But it seems like Blaydes is just a beast. And Jairzinho Rozenstruik, when I've seen him on the ground, he doesn't show me anything that he's capable of thwarting Blaydes. Blaydes also is not shy in committing to his wrestling. He doesn't care about putting on shows or getting booed or anything like that. He's just a big cat. Look, Jairzinho's 6'4 as well. Blaydes better not get too comfortable and just want to strike either, because that's Jairzinho's world. But I really do like Blaydes here, and I'll probably favor Blaydes over almost anybody, except maybe Ngannou and Gane. The problem with Blaydes is he's got two losses to Ngannou. Both, however, were not title fights. So if he were to just win and keep knocking people off, he may get a third shot just because this would be his first title shot. And, of course, that's if Ngannou can get past Gane and whoever else they throw at him. So it's not like when Benavidez, for example, lost to DJ and he was 0-2. He was 0-2 in title fights. That's why it was so difficult for him to get a third one. But I'm taking Blaydes here. I know it's heavy chalk at minus 350, but I just feel really, really good about his skill set. Now, a couple times he's gotten hit now, so you start to wonder, you know, what's up with that chin? I think you can start to ask that question. You can't call him chinny, and you can't say he's got a weak jaw or anything like that, but when he has gotten hit, he feels it. So we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, the shots that have put him away would probably put most people away, I would imagine. You know, they're pretty strong shots. But the thing with Jairzinho Rozenstruik is he just hasn't really shown me very much improvements.
Right.
He doesn't look that different than he did four fights ago. There's not really a progression. Like with Francis Ngannou, he'll show you a trick every now and again where you're like, ooh, I didn't know he could do that. You know, I didn't know that was a part of his game or something. I haven't seen much of that from Jairzinho. He seems like a nice guy. He seems like he probably trains hard. But I think there might be something mental as well going on with him where there's just – sometimes I just wish he was a little bit more aggressive. And then there's times where he can kind of get a little sloppy. The thing about Curtis Blaydes is he's just Old Faithful. You know what he's going to do, and he's really good at doing it. And most of the time, he's successful at it.
Agreed. Calvillo versus Andrade. Cynthia Calvillo versus Jessica Andrade. You know, we interviewed Cynthia Calvillo the other day. And, boy, you know, we always talk about, well, what if there was 175 and 165? Well, when it comes to the ladies, I often find myself saying, well, what if they had 120? You know, because Calvillo has trouble making 115, but at 125, she'll be good. I just don't know if she'll be champ. And it has nothing to do with everything I said about Valentina. It's just she's not as big as some of these other young ladies. Now, that said, Jessica Andrade is probably actually shorter than Cynthia Calvillo. But if you've ever stood next to her, she's got shoulders and back and guns. She's strong, hips and legs. She's strong. She is a stocky 125-pounder. So don't let her size fool you. She can throw you around if she wants to. She can hit you. However, her techniques are kind of sloppy. So I think on the ground, it'll be two different styles of grappling. Whoever obviously gets dominant positions will attack, and they'll be strong. However, I don't know if they'll be strong enough to finish the fight, except if it's Jessica with some ground and pound. She, like I say, she's pretty strong, and despite being stocky and muscular, she also has pretty good cardio, and she retains a lot of that strength as the fight progresses. Now, in the stand-up department, again, we have somebody who's a little cleaner with her strikes in Cynthia Calvillo versus Jessica Andrade, who tends to who's polished up and straightened her punches out a little bit, but she still goes back to her bad habits from time to time. And the short of it is, I'll be rooting for Calvillo, although I think Jessica Andrade is a sweetheart. She's been in our studio a couple times. And I just think she's pretty much incredible. You know, she's fought at 35, 25, and 15 and been a world champion. So she's playing with house money. Whatever she does after this is really, really going to be great for her, you know. But for her to fight at all three weight classes is actually pretty cool. I just think that she may be a little too much for Cynthia Calvillo. So I think I'm riding with Jessica Andrade on this. I've been flip-flopping, man, a lot on this one, back and forth, because the one thing I like about Cynthia, she's not going to be intimidated or scared, you know. So she's in that regard, she's got the fighter gene, just like the other, like the Diaz brothers. That's why they call her Chick Diaz, though she doesn't seem to warm up to that label as she used to. But give me Andrade for now. That's kind of who I'm going with. Maybe on fight night I'll tweet something different if I feel different.
Yeah, you're going to need the best Cynthia Calvillo to show up if you think she's going to win that fight. It's got to be the best her. And if you look at Jessica's game, she's only lost to the best.
Yeah.
Really, when you look at her losses, those are monsters that she's faced there. Like, there's no shame in that. So, I mean, you're going to need the best Cynthia Calvillo possible to beat Jessica Andrade, because that girl is a tornado. She's super, super tough. I think she can do everything Cynthia can do. So, I mean, I don't know. Cynthia's life has changed a little bit now. She lives in Vegas. She's been training out of Extreme and I think 10th Planet, one of those.
10th Planet, yeah.
And so maybe she's picked up some tricks. But, I mean, I look at Jessica Andrade's record and I just see anything that's red where there's a loss, it's to a very, very good competitor.
Can you tell me why Merab Dvalishvili is such a big favorite over Marlon Moraes? That's the one thing that's baffled me all week. Dvalishvili, who I think is super cool, man. He trains at Extreme a lot. He trains with Ray Longo a lot out in Long Island. He comes in at about minus 250, 275. Marlon Moraes comes back at about plus 200, plus 210. Moraes is a former WSOF champion. He's a UFC title contender. He's beaten a lot of really good fighters, including the current world champion. But I just don't understand those odds. Like, I know Dvalishvili, we always say he may have the best cardio in all of MMA, just a motor that never stops. But I haven't seen, like, striking where if they were to just kickbox, I would favor Dvalishvili. In fact, I'd favor Moraes. And the grappling, I've never seen Moraes be a complete fish out of water. I also probably wouldn't enter him as my pick to win Abu Dhabi the next time Abu Dhabi goes, you know, happens. Yeah, I'm not sending Marlon over saying, get some bitches. But for some reason, those odds are what they are. I'm on Moraes on this one. For look, gun to the head, I think gun to the head, I still take Moraes. I just love the way that kid can crack, man. He can kick you, he can punch you. And right now, I think this fight is super important to him in the sense of it may not be a title fight, but I think he knows the window's closing a little bit. He's got to smash this guy and stay in that circle of contenders with, like, Dillashaw's comeback and Sanhagen, who took a loss at the hands of Dillashaw. You know, and a lot of those other fighters that still want to stay relevant. I know Aldo's trying to make one last run. So you got to go in there and you got to do something. And I think Moraes is going to, you know, I think he's going to be able to pull this one out, man. But more than anything, I'm still just baffled at the odds. What are your thoughts on this fight?
Marlon's one of my favorite all-time fighters. I really enjoy watching him fight. But maybe it's because I've watched him so much that I can kind of tell that, sort of similar to Joseph Benavidez, he's just slowing down. He can still do a lot of great things, but he just doesn't do – he's not as quick as he used to be in doing those. Maybe a little bit of confidence has gone away as well, where Davishvili is just, he's a motor. He doesn't stop coming forward. He doesn't stop putting pressure on you. And Marlon's just not taking shots the way he used to. So I don't agree with the odds, but I do agree with the pick.
So you're going with Davishvili?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
If it's me, though, it's not more than minus. It should be about minus 150, 170, I think. No more than minus 200.
The odds for the fights, or sorry, the picks for the fight, if you want to get our full tally of the main card, look for the staff picks, which gets posted, I believe, on Friday. And you can see myself and goes along with the rest of the staff. This is a fun contest amongst all of us. I believe the defending champion right now is Dan Tom, the fight analyst himself. Before then, it was Ken Hathaway. I think this year, John Morgan's leading the way. I don't think anyone's won it twice. It's super competitive, but we all have pretty much winning records. So if you're a chalk player, you know, I think even the losses you would take on chalk would you'd be able to overcome that and still be doing well. I think the last event, 10 and favorites went 10-3. So we'll see how this one goes. But I will give you one parlay that I think has a strong chance, and that's Brian Ortega, Marlon Moraes, and depending on how you feel about this, remember I said it was almost like a coin flip between Lawler and Diaz? Well, if you can catch Lawler as an underdog, because remember, Nick Diaz is pretty popular, and as the fights progress, the people chase. And I think when it comes down to it, it's going to be hard for people not to take Diaz. So on fight day, keep an eye, and if Lawler becomes an underdog, then it's meant to be a three-dog parlay of Ortega, Lawler, and Moraes. You have some good fighters there, man. A guy that's fought for the title, a guy that's been a champion in a major organization, and a former UFC champion, along with being a former Elite XC champion in Robbie Lawler. So you got three good horses running on Saturday, all underdogs. But I think if you can hit that one, what's normally 6-1, I bet you $100 bet makes you over $1,000. I can open up the parlay calculator if you guys want. In fact, I will. Fuck it, man. I will. Parlay calculator. If you ever want to know what your parlay is going to pay, usually a three-teamer pays 6-1. But if you go to parlay, if you just type in parlay calculator, you'll get these calculators that come up, different websites. But I use VegasInsider.com, and you just insert your bet really, really easily. It says true odds parlay calculator. They already have the mythical $100 bet there. So I'm going to put in Lawler. We'll say I catch him at plus 105 because I don't think it'll be big, whatever it is. Marlon Moraes, I was quoting him around the plus 198, plus 210 range. I'm just going to go for plus 200. I won't be greedy. So plus 200 on him. And then Ortega. Remember, he's the dog. He's the title challenger. He's coming in the plus 145. I think I said 42 range. So I'm going to go plus 142. Normally 6-1, which is a $600 payout. In this instance, goes would pay. Let's see here. 1,388, almost 1,400 bucks.
Wow.
That means 50 pays 700, and that means 25 pays 350 if you take those three.
That's crazy.
Yeah. McGregor. Oh, what a horrible pitcher he would make if he was a baseball player. They asked him to throw out the first pitch of the Cubs game. He missed terribly. He wore a suit while he did it. It was one of the worst misses I've ever seen. The only saving grace is that he's in elite company because every other MMA fighter, almost every other MMA fighter I've seen do this has been just as bad. Maybe not as bad, but in the neighborhood. About a month ago, I saw Francis Ngannou throw a sidearm, but he actually nailed it. I think he even threw a strike down in Anaheim, California. But pretty much aside from him, everyone else has been a catastrophe, including Conor McGregor. His, though, may have been the worst.
For some reason, at that field, too, people just totally beef it. I don't understand it. I imagine if somebody asked you to do this, you probably do a little bit of research and just see what other people have done in the past. And like George said, you'll see a lot of kind of what looks like bloopers, just people not doing a very good job at it. But the one thing that a lot of them seem to have in common is they try and zip it over the plate. And I think unless this is something you do on a regular basis, you just got to get it over the plate, man. You know, I mean, don't throw a softball lob or anything like that, but just kind of get it over the plate. That's all you got to do. Look, have like a decent form and just get it over the plate. That's it, man. That's all.
Yeah. How do you think you would do if you did it?
I think I would do well because I wouldn't try and throw it very hard.
But would it be a lob like where it almost looks like a softball pitch, or it would just be a 60 mile an hour? You think you can get to 60?
You know, I don't like when we're outside playing catch. You know, something along that lines, just a little harder, like a little bit more form and a little harder, but nothing too crazy.
Would you puss out and walk down the slope of the mound and throw from there, or would you stand on the rubber?
You got to throw. Well, I don't know if they let you. I don't think they let you throw from the rubber.
Well, they'll let you go to the top of the mound, but maybe just off of it.
I would do it from there. And if the catcher is not in a full squat, I give them that look like you better get in a full squat. This is I'm no chump out here. No
would you look over to first base, maybe call off his first signal, act it out? Maybe. Or do you just walk up and kind of wave with both hands? They give you the ball, and then you toss it. And then you get the hell out of them.
I mean, I'd try and do something funny. Maybe an Amanda Wurlitzer, you know, get some Vaseline off my cap.
Yeah, that'd be good. That would be good. McGregor's a character. I'm going to miss him whenever he's not in our sport. So I may, unless he's actually offending people or hurting people, I think I may just enjoy him. Kind of like that crazy uncle at the family barbecue where you just, stay away from this, or what are you doing, or why'd you say that, you know. But then at the end of the day, that's all you can talk about is how much he made you laugh, you know. Just him in the suit cracked me up. The mascot. Did you see the mascot's reaction?
Yeah, he's just staring.
He got behind the catcher like the umpire. He actually squatted. He had both hands kind of on his knees like he wanted to call a ball or a strike. And then when McGregor threw, he pulled it basically, and he went far left. He's a lefty, so he went far left, or I guess far right in this instance. That thing hit the fence behind home plate. If they were moved up a few feet, he would have hit somebody sitting behind home plate. That's how bad it was. But the mascot turns to his left to see where it went, and then he turns back at McGregor, but the expression the mascot had was so funny because it was like, what the hell was that, you know? But he's got his hand over his crotch all of a sudden. Did you notice that?
No.
Oh, my God. It was hilarious. Almost like – nobody holds their balls and says, you suck balls or suck these balls. You know, his expression like was, what the hell was that? But he did have his hand over D's nuts, you know. It was just funny, man. You got to see it. It's all over Twitter. You know, when you're halfway towards being a billionaire, I don't think nothing matters. You get the last laugh pretty much no matter what. But it was funny. And like I say, I need to just enjoy him more for the fact that he gets to do all these fun things. Good for him, you know? Mm-hmm. And then Dana White Contender Series, lastly, we'll finish with that. 4 weeks in, are you having a blast? I know we kind of complained about too many contracts, but look, man, the guys and gals are giving contracts to are impressive.
This was a good week. This was a good week for them. I thought the level of talent looked a little better. Even in some of the losers didn't look that bad. Like they looked like they could maybe even have some promise. But it's making up for a few weeks that I didn't have as much fun as I normally do watching Dana White's Contender Series.
I think Dana is almost in a spot where he just doesn't want to give these fighters up to another organization. And then if they blow up over there, he'll look silly. Almost happened with Lochnane, because Lochnane was that close to being a finalist, you know, over at PFL. You know that guy delivers on the mic.
I think he's feeling pressure that if you're going to have your own show, you gotta be giving away contracts, because otherwise people are just going to go, well, then what are you doing? You only bring on scrubs, or what's the point of Dana White's Contender Series? I think he's feeling the pressure. I got to start giving things away. And I just don't know that the talent this year has matched years in the past. And maybe that has something a little to do with the Ultimate Fighter. It could, but I honestly don't think so.
Well, he keeps praising the matchmaking, but I think matchmaking is overrated. I think what's difficult about Sean and Mick's job is actually handling the roster and presenting the fights to them and finding a way to make sure they're excited about why that fight is happening, the card that it's been placed on, the benefits that can come out for the winner, you know, the repercussions for the loser, just handling that, almost like the way Phil Jackson used to handle the roster of the Chicago Bulls and basically saying, hey, look, 23 is our guy, but we need you all. We need four of you others out there and make them feel important. Or when he was with the Lakers, just trying to bridge the Kobe and Shaq stuff and everything else versus the actual X's and O's. Okay, this is the play we're going to run. I want you to inbound it. You know, none of that stuff's really happening with Phil Jackson. He's managing rosters and egos and talent and all that. Well, I think that's what this is all about. So when I hear Dana say the matchmaking's been incredible, I just don't think it's that hard to toss two professional fighters out there that weigh the same and go fight. And MMA fights, they're hard. It's hard for them to suck unless the fighters just don't want to fight, you know? And if one guy comes out looking great at the expense of the other, then you have the ability to go, did you see how great this guy looked? You know, and you're so much focused on that you don't worry that it wasn't a barn burner. And if it's a barn burner, then it was great matchmaking. I don't know. I just think that it's I think Joe Silva and Sean Shelby almost told us themselves, probably off the off the air. it's basically just knowing this guy's got two fights left in 6 months. I got to present fights. This guy's from Croatia, and we're going to the neighboring country. So let's get them there, you know, so that we can sell tickets. I think that's the talent in making sure the right people are on the right card so that the machine keeps flowing. You know what I mean?
Possibly.
Yeah. All right, folks. Listen, keep it locked on MMA Junkie throughout the weekend as we have the best coverage in all of mixed martial arts. And, of course, this is UFC 266 week with Brian Ortega challenging Alexander Volkanovski and Lauren Murphy challenging Valentina Shevchenko, along with the featured bout of Nick Diaz versus Robbie Lawler 2. They're running it back after 15 years. Should be an outstanding card on Saturday night. Of course, it is a pay-per-view. Goes and I will not be doing a watch-along, but definitely we will be watching along with you guys one way or another. So follow us on social media. I'm at MMA Junkie George, and Goes is at the Goes. And check out, for more on us, our video franchises of Spinning Backclick, Legend the Legend, Rankings Report. Hopefully we bring that back. It's all there on our YouTube page, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. We either participate on it live as talent, or we are behind the scenes working that. And lastly, the interviews that you see us do on the front page, when you see the video highlights, you can get the full extended interviews on that same page. I'll repeat it one more time, youtube.com/MMA Junkie Video. All right, folks, we are out of here. Enjoy the weekend. Goes, happy birthday again.
Thanks.
Is that 56 or
58? 56.
56. All right. Well, I guess I'll just have to wish you a happy birthday upstairs. Because this one doesn't count, right? You don't want to wait just 3 more minutes and I can wish you a happy birthday on this show officially?
Sure.
Okay. What's your parlay?
I actually already put it in, I think. Let me look.
I'll tell you what it pays.
It's not a single plays.
But give me the odds.
Let me see. Well, I got to pull it up.
Give me the names. Did I just catch you in a lie? You never really did it, or you really have it?
I haven't.
Okay, what is it?
I took Euros Medic.
Okay, hold on a second. Slow down, Cowboy. Euros Medic. He is minus 122. Okay, Euros Medic, minus 122. Who else?
I got him at minus 115. But, all right.
I'll give you minus 115.
I got Dvalishvili at minus 250.
Okay.
And I have Lawler at 115, minus 115.
All right. Your parlay, if you were to three-team them, pays 349. Now, usually, a $100 parlay pays 600, but because you have three favorites and one of them's big in the Dvalishvili, that's why you're down to 350. But that's still not a bad payday. So your 100 will pay 350, 50 will pay 175, and 25 will pay 8750, if my math is correct. That one was completely different from what I was expecting. So Euros Medic, Dvalishvili, and Robbie Lawler. That's what you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
What did you think of mine?
Well, I mean, if you look at the ones you did in yours, none of those guys, you don't really feel like they're out of the fight.
We agreed on Lawler. I'm just on the other side with Marias. And then I have Ortega over Volkanovski. Volkanovski's only lost once in his life. And I'm going
against him. My whole thing with that is that I just wouldn't bet that fight. Because there's just so many different variables in that fight. I don't know. So many confusing things.
Yeah. What do you think of the UFC Hall of Fame, by the way? You know, kind of Kevin Randleman's going in posthumously. He passed away 3 years ago. Mark Radner is going in as a contributor. Randleman is going in as a pioneer. And then you have a George St. Pierre, the great George St. Pierre is going in. And then the fight is Gustafson versus John Jones. It's a nice class, huh?
It is.
It is. You didn't sound too convincing there.
I just have a problem with their Hall of Fame. It's just kind of inconsistent in my eyes. If you look at the NFL, you look at MLB, NBA, you're just standing amongst gods, like people that really, really stood out.
Okay, who do you have a problem with?
And when you look at the UFC Hall of Fame, you have guys that are just Mount Rushmore type people, and then you just have guys that I believe were really good fighters.
So let's just air it out. Kevin Randleman.
I think Kevin Randleman was a really good fighter.
But so
I wouldn't say he was great.
I think the Pioneer Wing represents fighters that were. Oh, the birthdays are coming in. Happy birthday, Ghost.
Thank you.
Is that a birthday call you need to take?
That was Juliet. This whole thing is connected, so I had to send her a voicemail. Probably seem like a dick.
All right. I'll let you call her in just a second. I just want to say this. I know what you mean about Kevin Randleman. He was a world champion. But I think him, along with a few others, they set the building blocks. And I think the Pioneer Wing is special in that regard. So you may not have all gods in there, but I think you had the best at that time that the company could find. And by the time they stuck around and the game evolved, you know, it just, some fights may not have gone their way, but I think the Pioneer Wing, I give a little bit of extra leeway to, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Maurice Smith, I mean, wasn't he 500 or something like that, his record?
No, he was only like 7-6, but world champ. And again, you know, I mean, the poor guy didn't even know what the hell jiu-jitsu was when he started his career. So
I just always look at it as I've spent most of my life having to defend this sport. So if somebody from another sport comes and says, how come this guy's in your Hall of Fame? I'm not going to have much to say other than, hey, trust me, he was good in his time. Like, I don't have the stats to back it up the way other sports. When you look at some of these people in there, you're like, holy crap, he did what?
I got you. All right. Again, happy birthday. Thanks for doing the show and a little extra time. I'm sure you're going to get a lot of requests or a lot of birthday shout outs. So anyway, yeah, Juliet's usually in La La Land. So the fact that she set the alarm, that's pretty cool that she did that. I don't even think she does that for me. Anyway, all right, folks, enjoy the weekend. We'll see you soon. Go out there and be a champion.